maybe I'm in love with you. I say maybe. Maybe I'm in love with you. You put your arms around me, I'm in love with you. You say that you believe me, that our love is true. I say maybe.
Good afternoon. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel. You're listening to WCBN FM Ann Arbor today in the studio. Hannah Ensor is here in the studio joining me. I feel like I'm kind of shouting with excitement. So glad
Soon
you're here.
I
Hannah.
Get to shout with excitement. Thank you for having me.
Shout on in.
Hooray.
And a thanks to Home George for doing Living Writers theme song. Well, actually, it's a song out in the world that we just grabbed. So thanks to George Cooper of Home George. Before we go any further, I'd like to read Hannah Ensor's bio from the book Love Dream with Television. I love that on the book title, everybody can Google it to take a look at Noemi Press. You can find a visual of this. It's all in lowercase letters.
It is.
Too.
Yeah.
It feels like shape. All of these designs are important in the book.
Yeah, I would say probably so, or hopefully so. Yeah, I had a great book designer, Natalie Eilbert. So she made all of the decisions about the typeface and the font sizes and all that other stuff. So she did a great job.
And you were able to say, this feels right.
Yeah.
She's read the book. She understands the feel of it. And,
yeah.
And also, I'd like to thank Sarah Gazemski.
Yeah, Jemski.
Jemski.
Yeah.
For sending sending the book so we could get this conversation going. So here's the bio without further ado. Hannah Ensor is a poet living and working in Ann Arbor, Michigan. She has published poems, essays, and reviews, often on topics of pop culture, sports, and mass media. And when you read Love Dream with Television, if you haven't already, you'll see how this is absolutely true throughout the poems. With Laura Wetherington, a shout out to friend of the show, Laura, and Jill Darling, another friend of the show. Hello. She co-wrote the collaborative poetry chapbook at the intersection of three, and with Natalie Diaz, she served as an associate editor of Bodies Built for Game, an anthology of contemporary sports literature. Love Dream with Television is her first book, poetry. It was written in Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah.
Which also figures into the
It does,
the book.
Yeah. It's definitely the Tucson book. So
why do you say that, Hannah?
Yeah.
Like, let's start there.
Okay.
It seems like
I lofted that one right on up. So, I mean, just on the basic level, like the cover, it felt only right that the cover image is a photo I took in Tucson, and it's got that big bright blue sky and all the pretty colors on the wall. And just aesthetically speaking, I think that place has had a really big impact on me, but also emotionally, spiritually, socially, all of the things that could be true. I wrote most of the poems in the book in Tucson. I was trying to figure this out earlier, how old the oldest poems are. And I think the oldest poems in the book are ones that I wrote with Laura and Jill. So hi, Laura. Hi, Jill.
Hey.
Thanks for the poems. which would make those about 8 years old. And then everything else. I was in Tucson for about 7 years. So everything else was either when I was in grad school or after grad school or... just kind of bumming around Tucson. So.
Yeah, because I think I saw 2012 as one of the dates.
Yep.
The earliest one, but I wasn't.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying to be a historian.
Yeah.
I was going to try to be a forensic psychologist as requested.
Yeah, that's a plea I make in the book. Be a forensic psychologist. Like on TV. Yeah.
Yeah. And you actually came from Michigan to go to Arizona.
Uh-huh.
So maybe doing pieces of the bio. You were here at University of Michigan.
Mm-hmm. I was. I born and raised in Ann Arbor. I was here pretty consistently, besides little patches away that were no more than 4 months at a time. And then moving to Tucson was kind of my first big-ish move, and then I stuck around there for a while. And now I'm back as of 8 months ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I speak for everyone. Oh. Welcome home.
Thank you. Thank
so
you, everyone.
Glad you're here.
Thank you, T, and everyone.
And one of the things that brought you home, maybe because there's family, friends
yes.
here, and you also have new work here.
Yeah.
Well, not so new anymore.
Right. Yeah, no, it still feels new. I'm still, you know, in the first calendar cycle of it all. So I'm over at the Hopwood program, taking over for the remarkable Andrea Beecham, who
yes.
held down the fort for 38 years and did a great job
yes.
and handed everything to me in great shape. So I'm over there making dreams come true for student writers and doing some programming and just having a good old time. So if you want to come see me, I'm in 1176 Angel Hall all the time.
And there's like the famous or infamous Hopwood Teas
yes.
as well, right?
Yes.
That are open to everyone on Thursdays.
Absolutely. Thursdays, 3:30 to 5. Sometimes they start at 4 based on what else is going on in the room. But for the most part, Thursdays during the school year, come see me, have some tea.
So I'm glad we got that business out of the way. And one other thing.
Yeah.
Literati.
Yes.
Which is a definite friend of the show.
Yes.
October 3rd. You'll
October
be there
3rd.
Reading, launching Love Dream with Television.
Yeah.
It's Ann Arbor launch.
For
right?
sure.
Hannah?
Yeah.
So October 3rd at Literati. But now poet Hannah Enser is
Poems.
Here in the house
Yay.
With the first book. And so you, I don't know, there's within the poems, Hannah, you say Jane Miller, poet Jane Miller,
mm-hmm.
told you to go to the desert
yeah,
to write.
She did.
Was that, did you do that?
Yeah.
It feels like you did.
Yeah. So it was, you know, deciding where to go to grad school season and Jane was so wonderful and she called me and I think I missed her call and then called her back. And she just sold it really thick. She laid it on. She was like, I'm in my house. I'm making pizza. I'm looking out the window. There's no one here. There's no better place to write poems than Tucson. And it was very persuasive. And she mentioned all of my favorite poets. And she said, all of these people just read at the University of Arizona Poetry Center. This one read there last week, so you missed them. And this one read there 2 weeks ago. And I thought, this is amazing. They have a poetry center, which was really a very big part of why I think one would want to live in Tucson and be a poet, because they have this amazing poetry center there that does incredible programming and is a huge library of contemporary poetry. And I did end up working there for a little while. And so that felt like a good way to end my time in Tucson. This arc of Jane talking about the Poetry Center and talking about all the people that they brought out. She mentioned that Rosemarie and Keith Waldrop had just been there and I love them so much.
From the NELP days.
From the NELP days. Yeah, totally. So, yeah.
So that almost felt like almost this, I don't know, this like serendipitous
yes.
moment where you're like, this is the place. This
yeah.
is the draw for me.
Yeah. And she was right. It was the right place to go and write poems. There's some kind of beautiful combination of community and solitude there that felt really good because it's really cheap to live there. You can do almost nothing and still write your poems. You can do a lot and still write your poems. There's great community, great reading culture. Everyone seems to be working on something artistically, if it's like they have a band on the side or they're writing poems or they're working on their third novel and you didn't even know they had a first novel and all of this stuff where everyone's just kind of a buzz.
Or your painter friends.
Yes. So many painter friends. Yeah. It's a great place to be.
So I love the fact that we're thinking about this idyllic place.
But mm-hmm.
I've never been. So now I feel like, why have I waited this long?
We're going to go right onto southwest.com after this is over and we're going to find you some tickets.
promises, yeah. Hannah. Let's get that coffee yeah. first, right? but the title is Love Dream with Television.
Yeah.
And so much of the book, the feel, the pulse of the book is definitely a strong, bold voice, also full with anxiety
mm-hmm.
and a transparent voice, like a strong voice, but that's reckoning so much with pop culture
yeah.
and being part of the large
yes
of the world. Not a book of poems. I mean, the Grand Canyon figures in.
Sure.
And there's
yeah.
birds, you know,
yeah.
even in the last page. But
yeah.
Yeah. What do you have to say to that, Hannah?
Well, first of all, thank you for getting to the last page. That's very generous of you. It's a longish book, so
that's great.
You got to the birds. Yeah, I mean, so I think that's a really interesting way of framing the question as television and kind of like pop culture as another site. I think that's interesting, and I definitely think it's applicable to the poems. I mean, you can watch TV anywhere is a true thing, an increasingly true thing. So I definitely was watching TV from the desert. So I also think about that, like, where was my body when all of these things were happening? Like, when I was watching, actually, when I talk about America's Next Top Model, that was in Ann Arbor that happened, that I was watching America's Next Top Model. But the other phenomena that I'm talking about, my body was in Tucson, and I was in that place and in that community and in that conversation when the TV was on, if that's a way of saying it. But I do think, you know, in the ways in which I can kind of more or less articulate it to myself, when I think about what's interesting about writing about TV, it is that it's a shared language. It's as close as we get to all knowing the same Shakespeare lines these days, like that I can make some reference to pop culture, and there's a better than even chance that whoever I'm talking to, be it a stranger or a friend, knows what I'm talking about. That's something that we don't really have with book culture as much anymore. But we do have it with, you know, the Super Bowl, or if I make a Tyra Banks joke or whatever, there's someone in that room who knows what I'm talking about. And I find that interesting. And it makes it kind of like a more translocal or transnational conversation, maybe. Maybe transnational is a little too strong. I don't know how much confidence I have that, like, walking around Iceland I could. But, you know, there is
Iceland Hannah in the book.
Totally. Iceland Hannah's in here. And there's a moment where I don't announce it as being in Iceland, but where I'm looking at figurines. And that happens in Iceland. So I'm looking at these Disney figurines in this bookshop, and it's like, here's Simba, here's whatever. So that is applicable across nationalities.
Yeah, I feel like we're proving it as we go here. We're exploring here.
Take notes, academics.
Love dream with television. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This conversation shall be cited. Make sure to credit sources where credit is due. You mentioned Madonna.
Yes.
And I feel it's interesting because she used to be, like, even I'd say a decade or so ago, maybe more than a decade now. Oh, time.
How it goes.
Like a go-to source for conversation across demographics.
Yep.
Even then. And here she is surfacing in Love Dream with Television.
Yes.
Several times.
Yeah.
I might add.
Yeah, at least two, if not more. Yeah.
And there's, of course, also Beyonce. There's so there's many voices here.
Yeah.
But I did think, yeah, with Madonna, I wonder if she read the poem. Because at the time, you're also definitely saying her age.
Yep.
And in the description.
Yep. was an interesting one where, I mean, that poem where I mention her age, actually, the editorial conversation around that poem was a really interesting one. I had a great relationship with my editors. We worked together for 2 years, especially kind of the lead editor was Susie Garcia, who happens to be in Ann Arbor, which is great. But that had nothing to do with anything at the time. But
and this is no Emmy Press.
Yeah. Yep. And a lot of the things in that poem that mentions Madonna were kind of pulled from what the commentators were saying. This was about her performance at the Super Bowl. And so the commentators and people online kept reiterating her age as if that was extraordinarily relevant, that she was, I guess, in her 50s.
Because she's a woman.
Because she's a woman. So it just kept coming up that she was in her 50s over and over and over again. So I put it into the poem. I also put something else in the poem that was about Gisele Bündchen and her being a very pretty model, which was also coming up over and over again. And my editor made the really good point that, like, just because you're repeating a thing that a commentator said doesn't mean you're not reinscribing misogyny. So it's an interesting balance, I think, when you're doing stuff where you're absorbing the way that people talk about pop culture to not just reinscribe it and, you know, create your own mini violences against these subjects. So that was interesting.
And that's part of the subtext of the book, too.
Yeah.
Or actually, it's named. It's foregrounded.
Yeah.
Let's take a short break.
Let's do it.
When we come back, let's hear a poem.
Great.
Too.
Yeah.
Today on the program, Hannah Ensor is here. Her book of poems, her debut collection, out with Noemi Press, Love Dream with Television. I'm T. Hetzel. You've got Living Writers, and we'll be right back.
You can ride at the top of your pony, I know you won't fall, 'cause the whole thing's phony. You can fly swinging from your trapeze, scaring all the people, but you never scare me. Belladonna, my soul, no speed limit, this is fast lane, it's just the way that it is here. And you say, I never thought it could.
Welcome back. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel. Today on the program, Hannah Ensor is here. Love Dream with Television, the book on the table with us. Hannah, thanks for choosing the songs for today's program.
Thanks for asking. It was fun.
So why the one we just heard?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so it was funny because...
Why not?
I feel like I'm always waiting for the moment for someone to ask me for like four curated songs. And then you did. And I was like, I don't know any songs. So this one's really just like, I love Stevie Nicks so much. She also comes up in the book, which I hadn't thought about until this very moment. But
I thought that's why you picked it.
No, I wish I had thought in that way, but I did not.
No,
now I am.
This is great. No, but maybe the mind was thinking in
yes.
this way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a thing I've been thinking about recently is just how the mind keeps thinking about things, even when you're not thinking about them.
Yes.
Amazing.
It carries on, these things.
Yes. Yeah. They're just busy without us. But Stevie Nicks, love her. In the poem where she comes up, I think a little bit about the ways in which nascent sexuality totally shaped my idea of who Stevie Nicks was for the longest time. Like, her voice made me deeply uncomfortable. And it wasn't until, I don't know, like my 20s that I was like, oh, she's great. And I was probably a little attracted to her. And so I'm having this whole, I mean, over the last decade or so, this whole Stevie Nicks renaissance where I'm like, she's great. She's witchy. She's cool. Look at her holding that tambourine. So and this one, this Belladonna demo, I like a lot. And I just love how the piano is just kind of like a little, it's just poking, very simple. And so she's just sort of singing over it. And I like that a lot.
Mm. And again, a strong voice.
Yeah.
So what poem are you going to read, Hannah?
Yeah. You brought up the Grand Canyon one. So I'll read that one, Grand Canyon Death Options.
And just a quick side note, before coming here, I was in class and Zach, a student in the class, he was reading through because I had the manuscript there and he liked this poem.
Oh.
And he's not someone who said that he likes poems usually. And I was like, well, take a look at this and see what you think. But he found this poem. I didn't guide him to
Zach,
this one.
Thank you, Zach. I really like that. And I hope in general that this is a book that people who don't self-identify as liking poems can enjoy and can find something in. But maybe we can talk about more of that later.
Let's.
Okay. So this is Grand Canyon Death Options. There are 13 of them, just so you can be prepared. 1. Condor swoops, picks you up, drops you directly in the middle of the thing, directly over where the river is. The canyon is your radius, the rim, and you drop and drop into it. 2. Unexpected weather, unexpected wind gust, pushes your body, which is a windshield, a land sail, into the canyon from the rim. Tumble, tumble, it is unexpected. 3. Your lover photographs you and then pushes you in. 4. Your lover throws your sandwich or Wallace Stevens book or grandmother or water bottle over the edge, and you run after it. You have made your choice. 5. Jump. As far forward as you can, which is at the most in the tens of feet, you are no Olympian, and even if you were. 6. You somewhat desire water, though desire is perhaps too strong a word for what you feel, and it seems that the closest water is that river at the bottom, so you say, be right back, and start climbing, or walking and climbing, down toward the river, neither totally comprehending nor caring how long that will take you. Numbers and warnings mean nothing. And you die wearing jeans and a baseball cap somewhere just a few miles into your half-hearted trek. 7. Condor shadow makes everything dark, then again bright, and a seizure disorder you didn't know you had sends you wildly flailing into the largesse, the cavern, the expanse, and down you go, wild and yourself expansive beyond any previous expectation you had regarding your frail human limits, and above you the condor poops, poops freely, for there has never been and never will be any reason not to. 8. Not enough water. 9. There is snow packed and matted at the edge. You slip, and it seems so obvious. 10. Your lover does not yet want to share the Milky Way bar you brought to the canyon, and so you throw yourself over the edge. 11. Some bird you think you have seen before, but you have actually never seen before, hops toward you, and again toward you, and something about being given an opportunity seems to scream out to you. It is a voice that commands, do not move, no sudden movements, and so the bird, it is blue, continues hopping toward you until it is at your feet, and it hops atop one of your feet, and slowly, slowly, you reach out and touch its head so lightly, and it flies away. And 3 months later, you die of unexplained causes. 12. In this option, you are the bird. A person who wants to reckon with mortality, their own, and scale, in this you are implicated, throws a rock or a branch or a plastic bottle cap as far as they can, not very far, see death option 5. And on its way down, this projectile hits you squarely on the head. It is certainly not enough force to kill or injure you, but you are confused. It is fairly stunning and unexpected. And in your confusion, you fly into the edge of the canyon and tumble down already dead. 13. You and your lover survive your trip to the canyon without impulsively pushing one another into it. You are in the car and you leave the park watching the sun set over yet another set of desert canyons. Once you arrive home, you take off your boots and your socks and your thin spring coats. You begin pushing each other to the ground because you can, because it is safe now, because the wood floor will certainly hold, stay where it is, will certainly not collapse into a crevasse a mile deep, because there are no more mules or condors or strangers with cameras. You take turns pushing and pushing and pushing each other over until it is the middle of the night and you are both exhausted and bruised and crying on the floor. You close your eyes and think of the forests you drove through today. You fall asleep safe on the floor, still, and someday you will die.
Thanks, Hannah.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So you've done your Grand Canyon poem.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
That feels like something that you would have to reckon with. Is that right? If you're
probably
in Arizona?
Yeah. I guess so.
Or not. Maybe not. Because I know, do I have to have a Great Lake poem suddenly?
Right.
Maybe.
I mean, what a good
or
question.
Multiple ones? Who knows?
I mean, maybe to be considered a regional writer. I don't know what these categories mean. But I do think, I mean, there are ways that people write about the desert that I don't know if I'm participating in or if I want to be or if I should be or whatever. But I certainly have written this Grand Canyon poem.
And you said it was your Tucson book. Like, it feels like this is something that you want it to be.
Yeah. Or at least that I, in a personal way, can see that it is. And maybe it's more subjective and personal than, like, something that someone would pick it up and be like, oh, this reeks of Tucson.
Yeah, sure.
Smells of creosote and desert rain and, like, the monsoons just swept through the... I don't think that it necessarily is going to read that way. But I do know that I would not have written this book had I not been in Tucson.
And it seems like you said in the acknowledgments that you spent some time, let's see, in the desert,
mm-hmm.
and you acknowledged the particular nation you were.
Yeah, the Tohono O'odham. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so Tucson and like the U of A specifically and Tucson more broadly is the traditional homelands of the Tohono O'odham nations. So just trying to acknowledge a little bit, you know, where I'm taking up residence. Certainly did not ask permission to be there.
Which you say in the acknowledgments.
Totally. And I think just trying to figure out what to do with that information. And certainly we have that work to do here as well. I actually just heard about a new app that I haven't downloaded, but I think that I will. That kind of, it has its geolocation going, and you can turn it on wherever you are, if you're on a trip or if you're in your home or whatever, and it'll tell you a little bit, and it's crowdsourced, so it's not historically 100% accurate, but what nations have dwelled where and when, and a little bit of the history of maybe how that ended or if it didn't end, or...
Do you remember the name of it?
I wish I could.
Well, it's searchable, though.
Yeah, it is searchable, and it's in the App Store... And I can't even remember where I heard about it, but it's a great idea. And I think if we can have a little bit more of a constant awareness, I talk in the book a little bit about maybe what white poets specifically should be thinking about, at least according to Hannah. and I just, you know, I don't want to make any assumptions about what people are or are not thinking about on a daily basis. But at least from my observations and my own lived experience, I do think that there's more work to be done to just be thinking. And talking out loud with each other about it all.
Yeah, the talking out loud is key, isn't it?
It's key. Yep. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of awkwardness and anxiety around it. And I know I feel awkward and anxious.
Me too.
Just trying to make sense of it all in a way where we are building newer, better things and, you know, doing the work on our own in a way that also builds community. If that makes sense. Is that a full sentence?
Yes. It's just something to think about.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, hence my pause, everyone.
I mean, we could take a moment of silence.
Right.
Yeah.
Many times along the way here, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's also interesting that the Grand Canyon, the poem itself has death options.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the first thing that I chose to ask you about. Talk about what else you need to reckon with, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that poem was, you know, born out of a very immediate experience. So that's the only poem I've ever written in this particular way, which is that I was talking into my voice memos. I was on this trip to the Grand Canyon, and I just kept thinking about ways that a person might die at the Grand. There are all these signs all over Grand Canyon that, you know,
to sort of keep that in mind.
Yeah, they're warning you not to, you know, assume that you don't need water because it's cold, or to not hike further than a certain distance if you don't have these provisions, and so on and so forth. Lots of really scary graphics with lines through them, things not to do that you sometimes can and cannot differentiate what they're trying to instruct you about. And I certainly... I don't know how common this is. It's probably fairly common, but I do tend to kind of always have an eye open for ways that a person could die unexpectedly.
the next collection.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned that this book is all the way burned through with anxiety, and I think that that's true.
I didn't quite say that. Yeah, it's just a bold voice.
I feel the burned throughness, but... yeah, it was definitely like all those signs at the Grand Canyon. All of a sudden I was thinking like, well, here's another way to die and here's another way to die. And here's this Milky Way bar that I'm feeling kind of bad about. So I just kind of said them all into separate voice memos on my phone. And then I got back and I typed them up and all of a sudden it was this poem. And I kind of wish that would happen again.
Oh, I'm sure it will.
I hope so.
Sure it will. And the condor.
Yeah. Yep.
Was that a figment or was that... a sighting?
That's a great question. I mean, I think I probably saw some birds. I am no birder. I wish I was.
Keith Taylor is nodding.
Keith Taylor is at home scratching his forehead thinking, I taught you nothing.
Come on, answer.
Yeah, but there were definitely condors that existed around there. I might or might not have seen one. There were signs about the condors too, so
do not touch the condor.
Yeah.
Because months later you
disease.
But I think that's important to think about too, is this, you said this poem happened from this very real moment, mm-hmm. but the parts of the poem are still from your imagination, the imagined world, and our fears and anxieties.
And knowing how inescapable death is.
It's such a great last line
Hannah.
Okay, let's take a short break and we'll be back.
Great.
Today on the program, Hannah Ensor is here. We've got Love Dream with Television on the table with us with Noemi Press. I'm T. Hetzel. We've got Steph behind the glass. We'll be back. Welcome back. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel today. Hannah Ensor is here. Her book, Love Dream with Television, out with Noemi Press. Just out, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of hot off the presses.
Yep.
And you're going to be at Literati Bookstore October 3rd, 7
yeah.
p.m. So
yeah.
everyone put that on your dance card.
It's a Wednesday, so if that helps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Show up every Wednesday until
yes.
just to make sure, right?
Until it's Libra season, and then it's October 3rd. Oh. It's 2 days before my birthday. So
that's what I was just going to
yeah.
say. I know from reading Love Dream with Television that you are indeed a Libra.
Yes.
What does that mean to you?
Oh, great question. So I don't. You probably know about there are people who self-identify as amateur naturalists or whatever. Might not be someone who knows a ton about botany, except for picks up a little leaf and is like, oh, I can see this leaf pattern. That's maybe where I'm at with astrology. Certainly an amateur. But I do know that as I start to kind of orient around some of these ideas, a lot of it makes a lot of sense. I'm really grateful to have some guides in that. And to know things about, what a rising sign is supposed to be and what a moon is supposed to be. All of these things are starting to kind of come into some relief.
So have you had your chart read?
Yeah. I mean, I went to, I think it's astrocafe.com, which
anyone
can go to.
And this not, so this isn't part of the Tucson
thing. It's probably part of the Tucson thing. Yeah.
In the crosshairs of that.
Yeah.
That's
a bad
metaphor.
I have a friend who calls it woo-woo.
Oh.
So we're very woo-woo in Tucson. And, I think growing up in Ann Arbor and going to U of M, one has the tendency to surround oneself with a lot of intellectualism and a lot of front top of the brain thinking. So it definitely took a second to kind of settle into this different paradigm. And I think that I grew up with a lot of skepticism around what people might call new agey stuff. But I'm really fine, really settling in to my elder years.
for everyone at home or in the car or wherever you might be listening, in Love Dream with Television, Hannah says she's 31 is coming up, and so
yeah, now it's 32.
So this is the her codger era has begun.
I identify as an older woman, so.
Well, some people are born old souls,
it's
or
true.
So.
Or, yep.
Or, and that may be part of your path, then,
I'm going
Hannah.
With it. Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah.
But so now, but you don't want to say anything more about, like what's on deck for you with Libra right now?
No, yeah. No, it's a great question.
Check your newspaper, your online source.
I haven't been completely up to date in reading my horoscopes recently, but what I can say is that I'm noticing more and more my tendency to chameleon myself, which I think is a specifically Libra trait. So whoever I'm talking to, I'm really quick to just sort of be like, all right, here's who I need to be for this interaction. And I'm trying more and more, not necessarily to adjust that, but to be observant. Because I think that my first tendency when I noticed this trait was to think, oh, that means I'm not being myself. But I think actually what it means is something more kaleidoscopic, like that I get to be all these different selves and maybe also be mindful of the ways in which sometimes I hide from myself. So, it's that to me is where I'm at with my Libra stuff. And I think that shows up in the book a little bit, too.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. And that makes total sense. So also what shows up in the book in a really like a real presence is the like basketball.
Yes.
I'll just say it. The WNBA.
Hey there, sports fans.
And the NBA.
Yeah. Yep.
So basketball is obviously connecting to maybe the love and the television part of this. And maybe even some nightmares because we've got Dennis Rodman in, like what he used to mean, what he means now.
Yeah.
So basketball, it's throughout the book, too. It's not because the book, if we're going to talk about like the structure of it, is in three sections.
It
right?
is.
Why three sections? And then let's go back to basketball.
Yeah. So in this beautiful long editorial process with my editors, they did say something isn't quite in the shape it needs to be. I think maybe the next few months are going to be about organization. Start to think about sections. And I kind of said, I did sections in my MFA manuscript really quite badly. So I said to them, I don't think that I've ever done this right. Who does this right? And one of my editors is Carmen Jimenez Smith. And so Susie, we were all three on the phone call, and Susie said, you should look at Carmen's Milk and Filth, which is a truly excellent recommendation and truly excellent book. And so that was kind of my next turn as I went and I read Milk and Filth. And I had read it before, or I had jumped in and jumped out of it before, but looking specifically at the sections kind of gave me a better sense of just how nebulous these things can be. Like, I can't describe to you right now why Carmen picked these sections for her book. And I can kind of talk about why I have these sections, but it's really more like I kind of got the sense that there was like this cloud of keywords-ish, but the keywords are like whispered and some of them overlap. So it's hard to talk about, but maybe I'll try. So the sections for my book kind of showed up in like three. So I was I printed all the poems. This was like this phase at which I had written all the new poems. I had cut all the old poems. I was like really in the midst of like seeing what was actually there. And I laid them all out around the big round table in the Hopwood room. it was one of the first things I did in that space, actually.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So, the glass was all cleared off and I started to arrange the poems in a circle. Just sort of in the order that I would want to read them. And then at some point in arranging the first section, I put down a poem and I was like, oh, I think that's it. I think that's it for the first section. And then the first poem in that section was Man Boy Line, which is the name of the first section. And I'm saying line, L-I-N-E. One time I told a friend that I was thinking about naming my book Man Boy Line and they heard lion. So to clarify, man/boy, L-I-N-E is the first section in this book. And then as I continued that process of sort of arranging them around the table, thematics started to emerge. But the thing that kind of shocked me the most is that the first poem in each of those sections has the title that best summed up the book more, or the section more broadly. So it's Man Boy Line, followed by The Anxiety of Responsible Men, followed by Love Dream. And there are in the book two poems called Love Dream and two poems called The Anxiety of Responsible Men. So I guess the odds go that that would be the first, if there's going to be a section title based on a poem title. But one of the Anxiety of Responsible Men poems does show up in the first section rather than in the second section. So there's a little bit of bleed and arc. But I kind of see the first section laying out some of the thematics of the book. So it's doing stuff kind of quickly off the bat with fine arts, art history kind of stuff, definitely gender, some sports poems. It feels to me like what it's doing is kind of setting up a conversation about my / the speaker's identity as it interacts with these categories. The Anxiety of Responsible Men feels a little bit more like I'm thinking about the world, and anxiety of being responsible, which obviously has ramifications into organizational politics, into politics, ways of being a gendered, racialized body. People who get to think of themselves not as gendered or racialized, but indeed are. What it means to be responsible in the 21st century and how we hold ourselves to various standards and when we fall short. So that kind of feels like what the second section is loosely up to. And then I wanted to end in this place where it's about love, ultimately. So that's why Love Dream wraps it up. It feels like maybe the sigh at the end of the book a little bit, this third section. In part because I think that some of the stuff that's in that second section can be tricky and thorny. And I know that I upset myself writing some of these poems and brought up some stuff for myself that is harder and trickier. And so the third section is sort of like, all right, we made it through that. Let's talk about being in love with Mary-Kate and Ashley. not necessarily as comic relief, but just sort of as relief, I think.
And so did you feel after you had sort of gone around the circle in the Hopwood room, mm-hmm. and the poems were finding their places, there was that moment, it sounds like, that felt right.
Mm-hmm.
Then the book itself, like, does it feel like when you read through it, did it feel different because of the sections too? And just the act of naming them and having three?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think some of it, like I just said a bunch of that for the first time. So I think some of it is in talking about it too. But there was, I think those titles so nicely to me gave the shape of the book that it did feel like a different, I don't know, I would say project, a different project. But at no point until that moment did it feel like a project. It felt like a bunch of poems that were kind of all from the same wellspring, but very disparate. And I do think the sections helped me conceive of the way in which this was a book, which I've never felt before that I had written a book. Even when I had a stack of poems that was taller than 60, it still didn't feel like a book, I think, until the sections. So I'm really grateful for the shove towards making sections. And it just, it helped it feel like it had, even if it's, I think arc isn't quite the right word, but there is some kind of trajectory or multiple overlapping trajectories.
And the experience that you're creating for the reader.
Yeah.
Because you're ordering the poems. They are in, they each have their places.
Yeah.
And their neighbors and all of that.
Oh, I like that. Players. Like it's a neighborhood.
Poem neighborhood.
And now you're in this subdivision, and then you can go over to that subdivision.
or village.
Yeah.
Or just another street.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I don't know. Subdivision is like an accurate word. I shouldn't balk at it. I shouldn't.
This culture has done terrible things to the subdivision. Yes.
And so before, Hannah, before you arrived, actually, Stephanie remarked on how great the title was.
Oh.
And indeed it is, Love Dream with Television. Do you have like a short story of that, and then we'll go to break?
Yeah, sure. It was a really late incoming title. I didn't have a title for the longest time, and for a while it was The Anxiety of Responsible Men. But this thing that I'm saying about wanting to end in a place of love, it didn't feel like that was leading with love and with compassion and with self-compassion and asking us all to be better. It felt like it was a little bit scolding. And the whole stack of things before it was a book definitely pre-existed the rage around Me Too. And I do think that as the political moment, as it became more and more relevant, how the anxiety of responsible men might be kind of a think piece, I did kind of want to move away from that. So I didn't have a title. And then I think the sections helped me with that, because this last section is Love Dream and the first section is doing so much with television. I actually now feel like there's a poem at the end that connects with a poem at the beginning, and putting those together felt like it actually painted the picture. So thanks, Stephanie.
Let's take a short break and then we'll be back. Today on the program, Hannah Ensor is here. Love Dream with Television, the book on the table with us, Hannah's debut collection. I'm T. Hetzel. We'll be back.
When I think of what I want to be, there's always something clear that I see. The wind is racing, my pulse is rushing, I'm free like a bird, nothing can touch me. I'm
Welcome back. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel. Today, Hannah Ensor is here. Love Dream with Television, the debut collection out with Noemi Press. Hannah, thanks so much for coming down to talk today.
Thank you. I could sit here all day talking to you.
Me too. That would be me too with you. It was, yeah, it's absolutely lovely to see you. And I love your book of poems.
Oh,
and
thank you.
So could we, I fear that if we start talking again, I want us to get to a couple more poems definitely to have on air today.
Totally. So I'm going to read the two poems I was just talking about. The first one comes from the first section and the title is On Television and Poems. And then I will read Love Dream from the end of the book. So this is On Television and Poems. If I write a poem with television in mind, but don't say it, or if I just cast it differently, I may make successful art, one that creates in the mind of my reader a pleasure. If, for example, I make you a drawing, and that drawing is of faces, faces I have drawn, and if they otherwise match your desire for what art that is made of faces looks like, what does it change? My caption explaining, these are faces from Dawson's Creek, Season 5, Episode 3. I still love you. This is still a love gesture. This one right here. See, though, I got you, because in that last poem, there was no you. The you was made up, or it was you, the reader, until I said, I still love you. You did not think that I loved you, but you liked it better that way, right? I'll admit it. I did too. We want our poems to have beloveds, because beloveds give us an excuse to talk about television.
Hannah, could I ask you?
Yeah.
First, so how was that? How did you know that was the first poem? Because the first poem does a lot of work in the neighborhood of poems.
Totally. Yeah. And it's close to, I should mention, I said it was in the first section, but it's not quite the first poem. For a moment, it was the first poem, and I used it as a sort of, so you actually picked up on my secret first desires to have it be the first poem. But I think having it that early was important, and people kept urging me to push it further and further towards the front, because I do think it sets a certain tone. If television's going to come up all the time in this book, there might as well be some explanation for why, or why I don't cut it out of the poems. I do think that poets watch TV and sports and movies and listen to music. And I think that this is less the case than when I was in grad school, but I think there is a little bit of resistance around if it can be a poem, if it includes contemporary stuff, which isn't something Shakespeare was thinking about. So that poem, the On Television and Poems one, was one of the MFA era poems. And I think I wrote it in a kind of reactionary moment of me bringing stuff that had pop culture to workshop and having people say, what is this? Is this a poem? How is Hannah's use of pop culture? Blah, blah, blah.
So rebellion a bit.
Yeah. Like just,
and you mention in the poems, too, that revolution, we need that. We
yes.
all need to be doing whatever we can.
Yes. Yeah.
And so this was your way, it sounds mm-hmm. like, in that workshop moment.
Yeah. And very much my mentor, Jane Miller, who we've been talking about, I think that this was kind of it was in her workshop that I was feeling reactionary. But the poem itself, I think, was really influenced by her poetics. So there's a note in the back of the book to this effect. But some of the formatting that I did, so the right column, it's in two columns.
Thanks for talking about the shapes, because the shapes of the poems are vastly different in different parts of the book.
Yeah.
Even in within one poem.
Yes. Yeah. And so this one is kind of center justified with a kind of thin column of space in the middle. And then some of the lines are standard punctuation or standard capitalization on the left side. And then on the right side, it's all small caps. So it kind of oscillates back and forth, which you obviously could not tell on the radio. But the ones on the right that are in all caps kind of take their shape as well as kind of their rhetorical punch from, I was reading Jane Miller's A Palace of Pearls at the time. And it's a brilliant book. And she ends each of those poems with an all caps line that's often really declarative and beautiful, like stunning. Some of those poems, just like the way that she gets to her ending, will just knock you over. And then, not spoiler alert, but at the end of that book, she takes all of those all caps lines and puts them in one poem. So I was reading and teaching that book at the time that I wrote this poem. And so I kind of felt like I was putting on my Jane Miller mask in responding to what was going on in that room. And it wasn't her specifically that I was responding to, although, you know, she was doing the great teacherly job of asking the question, what is pop culture doing when it shows up in poems? And then the people in the room participated in that as well. and it wasn't always, to me, the most interesting conversation to have, because I knew that I was including pop culture. I wanted to talk about other stuff. But that became a kind of like pretty generative, collaborative conversation to have, because it made me decide how I wanted to do this, not just that I was doing it, but how. Because if people are just encouraging, then I'll just, you know, do my little thing. I won't think about it very hard. But it really did push me to know why I was doing it.
And why it mattered to you to do it.
Yeah. And so On Television and Poems, that poem I just read, that was kind of one first push in that direction of articulating to myself and then now to readers why I might be doing this.
And it's also, just notice now in the hearing of it that this is, it's mentioning the beloved, the love,
mm-hmm.
and then you're going to hear, like, where the everyone's going to hear the last poem in the
Whoa.
Book
from... I didn't even realize that's so cool. Okay, so I'll read love
dream. I love poems.
Poems
and
are
poets.
So cool. I love talking about poems. It's hilarious because I whatever
hilarious
hilarious exactly. to talk about poems. I have more to say about that, but I'll just read this poem. Love dream. In the dream, Mary Kate and Ashley and I were eco-terrorists infiltrating corporate living. Somewhere in or around LA, there were whole towns where employees of chains would live together. The homes looked like giant restaurants and were called things like I Heart Days Inn. Every dormitory slathered with advertisements. You could tell it was like a cult, something really creepy. Either Mary Kate or Ashley was my partner, but not the one that had originally had a crush on me, something like 15 years earlier. I waited in the car for the one who gave me the reddish hot chocolate mix I kept on my dash in a Ziploc. My phone wouldn't charge, and it was because I hadn't plugged in the other end. The one who had originally had a crush on me was breaking up with her husband in another car. All the cars were American cars. Doors slammed. My partner was back, either Mary Kate or Ashley. I loved her in the dream, but knew it was going to be a difficult time.
So let's talk about last lines of that one.
Yeah. Yep.
So this knowing, right? Because so much about poems is like the not knowing too, mm-hmm. right? But knowing it's a difficult time, that opens into so much.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I kind of wish this weren't the case, but I do think a lot of the poems are kind of focused on how things can go badly. And so I do think the end of this poem is a moment where, and this was a real dream I had. I obviously, like, you know, did things to the poem to make it happen. But I think I do remember a kind of melancholy at the end of this dream where someone's leaving their husband and there's hot chocolate on the dash and I don't know what's happening next. I'm just sort of sitting, waiting in an American car. And I think that that's the, you know, it's going to be difficult no matter what, even if you found your person, even if you whatever.
So this is also the political, too, that we were talking, that you mentioned
yeah,
earlier, Hannah.
Absolutely.
Where the book became more and more with your awareness infused with the political moment.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because even finding a kind of stasis in a personal life doesn't mean that the political ceases to be a disaster. So I think that, you know, a lot of self-care work can go into making kind of the local experience of the world feel better, and still so much to be angry about, so much to go wrong, so much we don't have control over. So just trying to reckon with that a little bit.
And, you know, I misspoke because this isn't the final poem in the book. It's the last poem that we were thinking about
yeah,
talking about. But would you mind reading the last poem
oh,
in
sure,
the book? And that's what we'll go out on.
Great.
Hannah and Sir, does that
sounds
sound,
great.
Sound good?
Yeah. So this is a humble C. Today, in the middle of May, I was irritated. It will not make me die. A fluctuation calling itself Oliver pointed me upwards where it saw birds, but not me. It could name them, not me. Birds in the closet of the sky. Hope way up there. I fail to hope. All the things on the beach. Several. When in doubt, Oliver said, consider the possibility that beauty is not here for us. Not. I cannot sleep at a sheared-off cliff, and I cannot rise above it either. It, a cliff, and I, a human, no bird. Three paychecks later and still, no bird. Still, the birds are somewhere I cannot see. Maybe not the same birds, but still.
Thanks, Hannah.
Well, thank you, T.
Come back anytime.
Okay, I'll be here tomorrow.
That'll be great. Steph, you heard? Everyone? Okay.
Yeah, we're ready to go.
Hannah Enser on today's Living Writers, Love Dream with Television. Hannah will be reading from Love Dream with Television at Literati on October 3rd. Thanks for listening, everyone. You can check out the Living Writers website and the Instagram at Living Writers and a fledgling Twitter. God, the Twitter needs help. But birds, right?
Birds.
And,
totally.
And there's some hope and love, right, Hannah?
In the closet of the sky.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hannah Enser, thanks so much for talking
Thank
with
you.
Me today. Until next time, everyone.